Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Hello and welcome to Circling the Bases, proudly presented by RotoWorld and NBC Sports. I'm DJ Short, and with me here once again is Scott Pianowski from Yahoo. Thanks to those of you watching on Twitch this evening, for those of you listening in podcast form or watching later on YouTube, we're recording on Wednesday evening, one day removed from the 4th of July. Hope you had a great holiday weekend, all that good stuff. But while we usually do our Waiver Wire Wednesday episodes, we're actually going to do a little mock draft with this episode, going back and forth between me and Scott, essentially coming up with a new top 30 overall ranking in mixed leagues for the rest of the season. This should be a lot of fun, Scott.
Yeah, especially for me because you gave me the first pick, but I'm looking forward to this. I love re-ranking things. I'm always doing my shuffle ups and, you know, what would you do if you drafted from scratch today? Or what does the first round look like in 2024? Those are always fun questions to me. They're look-ahead questions. So this should be a fun episode.
Yeah, I've had this concept in my mind for Fantasy League for the past few years where, yes, you draft your team in March or whatever, right? And then at the All-Star break, you get some keepers. Let's say three keepers, whatever. And then there's a complete redraft.
I love it.
At the All-Star break, carry that team through the end of the season. Maybe you get some bonus for, you know, finishing first, let's say, maybe, or if you're at first place through the All-Star break, maybe you get to keep five players instead of three, but some sort of concept where you can keep that excitement going in the second half. Whereas in a lot of leagues, if you're, you know, crash and burn, you drafted Jacob deGrom, you drafted Mike Trout, whatever, you know, it's going to look pretty rough, but if you have a chance to draft all over again, hey, you could still be in the mix. So, I you know, we're constantly thinking of ways to make fantasy baseball more interesting. I think that could be one path to do that, but this exercise is all about, hey, the All-Star break is almost here. Like, let's think about, you know, seriously think about how things have shifted since the start of the season and what we can expect the rest of the way. So this should be a blast. Like you said, Scott, you got the first overall pick. So this is a really tough choice. I'm sorry to put you in this position, man.
Right. Well, let's go back to March where it was like, which of the four or five players did you prefer with the first overall pick? There was not an overall consensus. There obviously is now because Ronald Acuna Jr. is breaking the game. He's on a loaded Atlanta offense, which basically their entire offense is getting shipped to the All-Star game. That's how deep. And he bats first and runs and hits for power. And also, they're playing everybody every day in Atlanta. I think they're going to pull back from that a little bit in the second half because they're just going to run away with the division, and they're going to have to think about load management as they get ready for the playoffs. If you're in a league, like I'm in a league at my hometown keeper league, it's draft league. The first four teams come in the money. The team that comes in fifth picks first the following season. We're rebuilding this year. I would love it. I'm just hoping we could somehow scrape out fifth place. I don't think we're going to because that team is kind of mediocre. But the reward for picking first next year is you get to immediately take Ronald Acuna Jr., who right now is breaking baseball. Look, Shohei Ohtani is the best player in fantasy, but I assume we're going on the Yahoo rules where he split as a hitter and pitcher. If he was one guy, if you're in a league, you use Ohtani both ways, and it opens up the question. He's probably the most valuable guy. And obviously, he's probably the story of the year. But yeah, in Yahoo fantasy formats, it's Acuna is the most automatic pick first overall. I will win this draft. I don't know what the next 29 picks will look like, but I have Acuna and you don't.
Yeah, no, it's, hey, it's legit. So this is hard now. Who's number two? Because I think there's so many ways you could go. And I was kind of struggling with this, but I'm going to go with Fernando Tatis Jr. here. Has played really well since returning. Remember, he made his season debut, I think it was April 20th. And here he is, has 16 home runs, 14 steals. Hitting for average, he's got 48 runs scored. He's filling up the box score just like we would expect. And he's really been locked in for the past, what, month and a half. So I think probably the safest way to go. Also has the eligibility between outfield and shortstop. I think that's just a little bonus there. I was thinking maybe Corbin Carroll, maybe Shohei Ohtani utility only. But given that Carroll is still a rookie, has only done this once, you know, great. I mean, he looks like a superstar, obviously. But I have to go with Tatis because we just know what he's capable of doing. And he's doing it right now. So Tatis is my pick number two.
Right. And then San Diego offense starting to perk up a little bit. Juan Soto has been a lot more like Juan Soto over the last 5 or 6 weeks. Nothing wrong with Tatis in that spot. Now, you mentioned Ohtani and Carroll, who are the guys I'm looking at here. And I think I'm going to check the FOMO box. I don't have any Corbin Carroll, so I'll get him in this draft with my next pick. He's actually producing plus value in all 5 categories. His Arizona offense has been much better than expected. And, you know, anybody who is on pace for like a 40-40 season, he's in that neighborhood. He's probably going to hit around 300, which is a really good average in today's game. And the pieces around him are better than expected. So I wouldn't blame anybody who went Ohtani here. Freddie Freeman, just some of the other Braves are interesting, but I'm going to check the FOMO box. Give me some Corbin Carroll.
Yep. I was going back and forth between those two, and I'm going to go with Shohei Ohtani at number four. Hitter version, just this power tear he's been on has been incredible to watch. I know he left to start the other day with the blister, but he's in the lineup tonight, Wednesday night, so it's not going to stop him from hitting. Might get a little break from pitching going into the All-Star break. Might not pitch in the All-Star game, but not affecting him hitting. Gives you speed as well. I mean, he's looking better than ever at the plate. Once-in-a-lifetime talent. But getting it done just as a hitter in Yahoo formats, I think you got to give him props for that.
My colleague Frank Schwab did an article on the AL MVP odds about a week ago. And I don't know if this has changed, but I will quiz you. Obviously, Ohtani was the runaway favorite. Who do you think was the second betting choice in the AL MVP market? This is a week old, so it may have changed a little bit, because I wouldn't have gotten this right. He's a good player, and he's somebody everybody knows, but I never would have gotten this right.
Is it Luis Robert? I don't know. I honestly have no clue.
It was actually Corey Seager.
Okay, I can see that.
And that, a little bit of projection, right? The idea is that, okay, well, he hasn't played the full season, but he's got the pretty average. Texas may win that division. Of course, the only way Ohtani isn't going to win the MVP is if he gets hurt, which hopefully it won't come to that. Obviously, Mike Trout is hurt right now. So if this was a waiver wire podcast, I'd be telling you to pick up Mickey Moniak again. I don't know if he'll play against lefties, but he'll play against all righties now. Mm-hmm. I'm back on the clock. I know floor picks get booed down. Everybody wants to play with their hair on fire. You take some guy who's going to have some crazy season. I ask you, DJ, I ask you, kind listener, when's the last time you rostered Mookie Betts and regretted it? This guy is just 120 runs out of the box. Power, speed. It's not the classic Dodgers lineup, but in Yahoo, qualifies second, qualifies as shortstop, qualifies at the outfield. My first two picks were outfielders. I assume we're assembling some semblance of a team in addition to giving top 30 picks. So I want the flexibility of Betts. And again, he is upside. He's won an MVP before, but I think there's a floor with Betts as well. So let's get him on the squad.
Yeah, I'm into that. And speaking of, like, I wouldn't say boring, but like, consistency here.
You go.
Freddie Freeman.
I was hoping to back up both of those guys. Yeah, I knew you wouldn't let me do it though.
Yeah. Class of the first base position. And that consistency, just year in, year out, you know what you're gonna get from Freddie Freeman. I feel like he doesn't get the respect he deserves as a fantasy producer. But yeah, well into this top 10, and there's a name that we had very high expectations for going into the season. He's still on the board right now. I'm curious if he might be who you have next.
Yeah, you're trying to bait me. I hear you. You got to be thinking of Julio Rodriguez.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what? He's shown signs of being Julio Rodriguez again over the last few weeks. I'll do it.
Yes.
It's another outfielder, but so what? At any point, you know, a lot of times I just for fun, I'll look at like stats for a month. Like, you know, the Braves went 21-4 mm-hmm. in June. The Reds stole 50 bases in June. I would not be surprised if some month ends like, oh yeah, Julio Rodriguez was the best 5x5 player over the last 30 days. Yep. I've seen signs of life. Again, because I took bets as a floor pick, now I'm going to go a little bit more upside. There isn't as much floor with Rodriguez. He has, obviously, his track record's much shorter, and Seattle isn't as mm-hmm. exciting a place to hit as some of the other parks, but I don't see it can go wrong getting Julio Rodriguez, who's his floor is basically what he's done already, which is still a good season. And I still think when we're talking next spring and talk about the first round, Julio Rodriguez is still going to be an above the fold pick.
Yeah. And I'd say the same for Trey Turner, who got up to a really just incredibly disappointing, kind of like perplexing start to the season, but he started to look a bit more like Trey Turner recently. And I know there's going to be, you know, a 30-day span, like kind of like you were saying with Julio Rodriguez, where Trey Turner is going to be the best overall fantasy performer. Like, it's going to happen at some point in this Phillies lineup, which I still think is a very good lineup. The weather heating up there in Philadelphia, the ball's going to fly. I think Trey Turner, you know, where I'm getting him now, 8th overall, seems like a bargain to me. So I'm going to go Trey Turner and this is pick number 8. In this mock draft so far.
So the story of the season, maybe for the first 5 or 6 weeks, and it's tailed off a little bit, was the Tampa Bay Rays. It just felt like they never lost. And they had a lot of guys who were out kicking their fantasy ADPs. This is another FOMO scratch for me. I don't have any Wander Franco. We always talked about him as a future batting champion, but he's stolen bases at an aggressive clip this year. He's certainly shown power. Probably going to end the season around 20 home runs, maybe 40 to 50 stolen bases. Should hit for about 300 average. And one of the few guys, the frustrating thing about Tampa Bay is their secondary players. You never know if they'll be in the lineup every day, and it drives me crazy because I want to roster some of these guys. But now I've inherited a chore, or it's like taking out the trash. I have to make sure I'm up early enough and on the computer, on the phone, on the Yahoo app, getting my Tampa Bay lineup set. But we know Rosarena's in the lineup every day. I think he'll go in the top 30 somewhere. And I don't know, maybe Franco's a second round pick. But again, I'm scratching a little FOMO itch. I'm getting a player who's still on the escalator. Let's get him on the team.
Love it. And I feel like there's been this conversation for the past couple of years about Wander Franco, where we're like, really good player, probably really good real life player, but not sure it can be a first round pick. That was an industry talk for a while in fantasy baseball, but I think he's silenced those doubters. And he's one of those players who's really benefited from the rules changes too, in regard to stolen base success. So certainly I think he deserves to crack the top 10. So I'm next, and I am going to go with, I'm going to go with Kyle Tucker, who hasn't had quite the most like amazing season. And maybe that's part of just the Astros aren't firing on all cylinders offensively. Like, there just hasn't been this stretch where they've had all their pieces. Right now, Yordan Alvarez is out with an oblique. Jose Altuve might be sidelined for a while with an oblique injury, too. But you look at what Tucker's done. I mean, he's on pace for maybe having a 30-30 season, sitting for average, scoring runs. Like, he's doing everything you want in a potential first-round pick. So maybe not getting the hype as some of these other names we've talked about so far, but certainly someone looking forward that I think can be a very dynamic fantasy performer as the season moves along. And I will follow this up here since I'm picking back-to-back. I'm going to go with Bo Bichette, hitting for average right now. I think the only negative for Bichette is that he's not stealing bases, which I think you would like to see with a first-round pick. That's the only negative, but he's hitting for power, he's hitting for average. Maybe he'll be a little more active stolen base-wise during the second half, but I think Bichette is unlikely to probably slip into a second round in a draft at this point.
Great pick with Bichette. You know, it's funny how Toronto, we thought, I think everybody thought that the park would play good for offense this year. It's actually been a really good pitching park. And I think we've seen enough of that. Look, it's, I know baseball's all about getting the deep sample, but we have to react to the sample we have in front of us. And I've given up on all the hopes I had that this was going to be Disneyland before the season, but Bo Bichette, there's no park that's going to contain that guy. He's just, he's going to be great anywhere. So when I took Acuna first, I knew, well, at some point I got to try to get some of his friends with him. And so I'm going to go with Matt Olson. And a lot of people would say, wait a minute, Matt Olson, he's at 248. He's not going to steal any bases. He's on pace to hit 50-plus home runs, and he's on pace to score 130-plus runs and drive in 130-plus runs. If you're going to dominate three categories, that play, and look, Matt Olson could also hit 270 the rest of the way. I mean, maybe he doesn't help you in average, but it's not like he's going to hit 205. And he's surrounded by – it's the deepest lineup in baseball, man. I got to get multiple pieces here. I had a couple of drafts where I took Pete Alonso, who I still like very much, and it blocked me from getting Olson later, and that was a Cut Wars pivot that I had. And not that Alonso's been bad. I know his average isn't where we want it to be, but, man, I wish all my Alonso shares – I'm not trying to kick the Mets fan while he's down right now, but I wish all those Alonso shares were Matt Olson shares because he's having the season. I thought he would – maybe it would take him a year to get adjusted to the National League, adjusted to Atlanta. And I still kind of feel sad that Freddie Freeman isn't with this team because I felt like he should have been a lifelong Atlanta player, but – Matt Olson, man, what a great baseball player, gets on base, and when he hits a home run, they land like 10 minutes later.
Yes, and Olson was, well, looking at futures props going into the season, I was big on Matt Olson to lead the majors in home runs. I think there's a real chance that will happen.
Yep,
for sure. With the way, I mean, Otani's right there too, but Olson, man, if he can continue to make contact at a regular rate here moving forward, man, I think 50 plus home runs is very much in the offing for Olson this season. He was drafted right in the same area as Pete Alonso going into the spring, and rightfully so. I think they're kind of similar profiles, honestly. But Olson with the better lineup, I think he probably deserves to go ahead of Alonso at this point. I still like Alonso a lot, too. I'm not going to take him next here. I'm going to take Juan Soto, who you mentioned earlier, looking a lot more like the Juan Soto we expected. He got off to a slow start this year, but basically the past month and a half, he's looked a lot more like the Juan Soto that we know and love. I expect that to keep going throughout the second half of the season. Power, a little bit of sneaky speed there. We know he gets on base pretty much more than anyone. So there's going to be runs scored there as well. So Soto at this point feels like a bargain to me.
I love it. So when you told me in email we're going to be doing this draft, top 30, there is a player I had in mind. I had no idea where to slot him, no idea where to draft him, but I just said, I just got to get this guy on my team. And he's only played tonight. He's playing his 26th game in the major leagues. He hit his fourth home run tonight. He's already got 10 stolen bases. Multiply that by six. He's on pace right now to have a 24 homer, 60 steal season, hitting over 300. I'm talking about Ellie De La Cruz. The Reds have become just one of the most fun teams in baseball. As I said, they had 50 stolen bases in June. One day I actually went, I think it was Monday. I forget what day it was this week. I actually decided to bet a stolen base prop on like six of their guys and none of them stole bases. And then everybody who I bet, I mean, the tiny little bets, whatever, I'll be fine. I'm still eating dinner. But the next day, like all of them stole bases. I was just a day early on it. Maybe I did. Maybe
the way
I
it goes.
Didn't evaluate the Florida catching situation properly. But look, man, Ellie De La Cruz, I'm going to predict right now, he's going to be on magazine covers next year, you know, the Cincinnati Whiz kid. And what a fun team, right? Spencer Steer came up. He's been really good. If they can just get a little pitching, it's hard to kind of sell yourself. I know there's been injuries there. There's been underperformance there other than their bullpen, which has been very good. The starting rotation hasn't been great. But right now, you talked about them at one point a few weeks ago. They were 7-1 to win the NL Central. Now they're in first place and looking every bit like a playoff team. I mean, I look at the Reds roster and the Brewers roster. I feel like I would take the Reds player at almost every position right now.
Yeah.
So I had to have De La Cruz. I don't know if it's too early, and you know, people can tell me on Twitter or whatever social media platform we're going to be on tomorrow. I don't know if it's Twitter, but
yeah, exactly.
Come find me somewhere. I just had to have him, so he's on my team.
Yeah, everyone's tonight. Everyone's going on Threads, so we'll see what happens with that. I just added it too. I have no idea what it is. I guess it's kind of like Twitter, but not really. And we'll see what they do with that. But yeah, over the weekend with everything that happened there, rate limit exceeded. Saw a lot of that over the weekend, which is tough for a place like Roto-World where we, you know, gather and synthesize news to put it into our player news feed, and to kind of be, you know, stifled in that manner is weird.
It's such a shame. I love Twitter. Yeah. I love what Twitter was.
Yeah.
And maybe it can be that again, or perhaps one of these other, and I'm, you know, as I said, I was on vacation for a week. I played golf back in New England, saw some friends, ate some great food, and unplugged as much as I could. Somebody even said to me, somebody tweeted to me, said, "Are you going to tweet this little during the football season?" I said, "Hey, I was just on vacation, man. I, you know, I try and do what you're supposed to do on vacation, which is, you know, not be on social media every waking minute." But hopefully we can get to a good place to share ideas and to share, you know, movie recommendations. I just finally saw the new Top Gun. I have a bunch of thoughts on that. I'll probably share some tweets on that. I'm not going to draft Maverick or, you know, or Phoenix or, you know, any of those people, but that was a fun movie. But, I don't know where we're going, man. I feel like we're all flying blind on this. I feel like we're all going to be somewhere sharing our ideas and sharing our you know, kids' photos and dog photos and all that stuff. And if that ends up being Twitter again, I'm fine with that. Maybe it'll be Threads. Yeah. Maybe it will be Blue Sky. I'm not even getting that name right, I don't think. But
no, I think it is Blue Sky. Blue Sky, and okay. I'm still waiting for my invite on that one.
Me too. Again, yeah, I'm on the way. It is Blue Sky, Adam, producer Adam points out. Yeah, I'm on the waiting list, so they're probably vetting me to see if I'm, you know, a value add for Blue Sky. Maybe I'm not, you know, if you drafted Fantasy Endless, I wouldn't go in the top 30, but Ellie De La Cruz is on my team. I got Acuna, so I'm feeling pretty good.
No, I don't think it's crazy at all. I think when we look ahead to 2024, kind of like you were saying, like he's going to be on magazine covers. I think he'll probably be a second round pick at this rate. You know, I think it'll come down to,
Why could it be a first round pick? Julio Rodriguez percolated in the first round. What else do you want to see from him? He's filling every category.
I think it's just his ability to make contact. Like if he's striking out 35% of the time, that would be the only, that would be the negative.
This is a classic. The league will adjust to him, and how does he adjust to the adjustments? That will be what we're looking for in the second half. Is once the league has seen him a little bit, there's a little bit of a book on him. And as you said, there's a lot of swing and miss in his game, which is not a kill shot. You know, the Major League Baseball is full of strikeouts. Even in this game that has a different shape this year, you can't. Joe Sheehan always says the pitchers are wizards, right? I mean, they're so good, and the relievers come out, max effort, 15 pitches. So it's even the best players are going to strike out. There's only a handful of guys who do not strike out, but one of them most notably. But maybe, who knows? This is one of these things. It may look silly, you know, at the end of the season, if De La Cruz hits a big slump, maybe he hits like 187 for like a month long period. And people are like, oh yeah. Remember when people like Pianowski thought he was a top 20 player? That's kind of silly. But I'm just, at this point, I have a lot of floor guys. I'm looking for some upside with De La Cruz.
Yeah. I don't think it's crazy at all. So we are going into our 15th pick right here. Before we do that, just a reminder, Sunday mornings mean MLB leadoff on Peacock. You can live stream games all season long. And this week, the AL West leading Rangers travel to the nation's capital to face the Nationals. Coverage of the matchup begins at 11:30 a.m. Eastern. Again, it's exclusively on Peacock, and you'll get to see Corey Seager.
Have you ever brought your magic to Walt Disney World like, hey, we came to play? Did you tip your tiara to a Creole princess or get goofy officially? When we come through, it's true magic, because we came to play at Walt Disney World Resort.
Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Like you said, second in the betting odds for AL MVP. Probably won't win it barring an injury to something going horribly wrong. But
let me say this about the Rangers. I did power rankings for Fantasy Juice, I don't know, right, 10 days ago or something like that. I had the Rangers number one. Now, if I redid that today, I think I might have moved Atlanta up to one and Texas would be two. But the Rangers were one of those teams that I wish somebody tapped me on the shoulder and just said before the season, get the Rangers. They're all gettable. They're almost everybody's going to outkick their coverage. I don't want to say too many names here because I'm probably ready to draft a couple of Rangers in my next few picks. But you know, they've given us a fantasy viable catcher. They've given us a really strong stud starter, not named Jacob DeGrom. They have a dedicated closer. They've been a really great fantasy source and certainly worth getting up early on Sunday because you probably have a lot of these guys on your roster.
True. So we haven't taken no pitchers yet. I'm not going pitcher here either, but interesting, no pitchers. We're at pick 15. We're halfway to 30 right now. I'm going to take Jose Ramirez with the Guardians.
Wow.
Not super exciting numbers so far, but steady as it gets. I mean, 52 RBIs, 51 runs scored, 13 homers, 9 steals. When you put that all together over the course of the season, you know, you're talking 100 RBIs, 100 runs scored, you know, almost 30-30, and it's like the most boring 30-30 ever, maybe. I don't know, or 30-20, or whatever the case may be, but that's still very good. He's consistent, fills up categories, not going to hurt you in batting average. I mean, you just take it and run with it.
I love it. The only thing with Ramirez, great value, right? He was in the conversation for maybe the first overall pick and certainly a top five pick before the season, so you're getting that nice value of him dipping down a full round. And so, but I just don't like the Guardian hitters around him. They've had trouble filling out a lineup of interest. And you know, you mentioned the Peacock game and the Rangers. I talked about how they were a juicy team for me when I did my power rankings. I'm a Marcus Semien guy, and I know he doesn't knock everybody's shoes off, but he's just good at everything. He plays every day. He bats leadoff. You get that extra volume, qualifies at both middle infield positions. You know, he's not running as aggressively as he has in past years, but he still steals some, hit some home runs, and I love guys who score runs. I love guys who pound the volume. So Marcus Semien, I'm a Semien guy, right? I was saying before the season that he was somebody I thought was mispriced in the third round. I think in a lot of drafts, he could probably still go in the third round, but I'm not afraid to dip around early on Semien because, again, I want him on my team. He's consistent. He stays healthy. And you want to invest – there are destination offenses, right? I mean, I talked about the Braves, destination offense. I talked about the Rangers. They're a destination offense. I just got the leadoff guy for, I think, the two best offenses in baseball. I feel pretty good about that.
Yeah. So my next pick, I'm going to go with Yordan Alvarez with the Astros. And I know he's hurt right now, but it does seem like he's on the way back, and I anticipate probably – right after the All-Star break, he's going to start a rehab assignment. And then probably it's just a matter of a few days before he's back with the Astros. So I'm not going to let the injury push him too far because when he comes back, I just expect him to mash. And he's outfield eligible too and Yahoo. So it's not like you're boxed into utility. So hopefully, you know, the oblique isn't going to resurface or whatever the case may be, but assuming he comes back shortly after the All-Star break, I think he's going to be a beast.
I love it. I wasn't sure what to do with Alvarez. This is another pick that could look absolute like a steal, right? Because he probably – a healthy Alvarez is a first-round player. I think he might be the hardest guy to get out in baseball right now because lefties can't get him out. You can't get him out with off-speed stuff. His entire – I feel like you look at the entire strike zone, it's just a hot zone for that guy. I don't know. He's terrifying if your pitcher is going up against him. You just don't want to watch because you expect something bad to happen. Unfortunately, that lineup has not been – you know, Tucker's been fine. Bregman's been a little bit of a disappointment. Obviously, Altuve got hurt earlier in the year. It's just – it's weird to reprogram myself as the Astros as a team not being a dangerous offense, but Yordan Alvarez is just a monster, and I don't think there's anything wrong with picking him. You know, before the season, I was all on the White Sox, and man, it's been ugly. There's been injuries. There's been poor performance. I'm still trying to wrap my mind around the idea that Tim Anderson isn't good at baseball because it just goes against everything Tim Anderson stands for me. But Luis Robert has put up top 10 stats to this point. Now, maybe he doesn't have the running mates in this offense, but another guy on pace to have a big power season. He does run some, and he hit for a plus average in today's game. So maybe by Eloy Jimenez enthusiasm, maybe by Tim Anderson enthusiasm, maybe by Giolito and you know some of the pitching guys. Giolito's actually been okay, but maybe it's Luis Robert was the guy I should have gotten in Chicago, and the other shares go down the drain. But props, man. You're the last batter standing on a team that's kind of been a shipwreck.
Yeah, no doubt about that. Exciting to see him. He's going to be in the Home Run Derby as well. Looking forward to seeing that. Just hope he can stay healthy. A full season from Robert could be really fun to look at the baseball card going in the next year. So I am going to take our first pitcher. I think it's kind of wide open here. You could go any number of ways, but with the back injury to Shane McClanahan, I'm just going to go with Spencer Strider and see where this takes me. The strikeouts are there. I know there was a bit of a rough patch. There was a start against the Mets where he gave up 8 runs, and then he got hit around by the Tigers in the start after that, but he's bounced back nicely from there. 3 straight games with at least 9 strikeouts, 2 runs or fewer, earned runs or fewer in each of his last 3 starts. So I think he settled down a bit. I mean, he already has 155 strikeouts in 98 and a third innings this season. We love the Braves lineup, so the run support will be there. So for me, Strider is the first pitcher off the board at this point.
I like it. I was asking myself, well, if I'm going to tap the pitching tier, who would be my first pitcher? And I think Strider would have been my guy too. Although I was strongly considering another pitcher, and I'll just take him now. And this may seem a little weird. It may seem like I'm maybe pushing him up a tier. I think when we ranked pitchers, he may have been closer to 10 than he was to 1. But Framber Valdez just does something that I love. Every start goes deep. Every start, you know, he gets like 5, 6, 8 strikeouts, gets a lot of ground balls. He's a really tidy whip. This isn't the Astros team maybe that we've seen in recent years, but they're still a winning team, probably a playoff-bound team. I know he's got a little bit of ankle injury, but it sounds like he's going to make his next start. Framber Valdez, I don't know that he's going to win the Cy Young Award or anything like that, but I just feel like his floor is proven to be incredibly sturdy. So let's get him. And to start the third round, I mentioned Tampa Bay that don't have a lot of everyday starters, but one guy who does play every day is Randy Arozarena, and he's a 5-category guy. And before the season, I said, you know, don't draft Bobby Witt, who's projected to have Randy Arozarena stats. Take Randy Arozarena like a round and a half later. That's proven to be pretty sound advice through half the season. I'm curious if Witt does get taken in this draft because he obviously still has a high ceiling. But
yeah,
Randy Arozarena is underrated, man. In fact, when I mentioned that AL MVP question, I sent it around to some friends. And some people thought maybe Arozarena deserved to be number 2 on that list. He was not that far behind Seager, and Semien was on that list too. So Randy Arozarena just become a very quiet, underrated, multiple category guy in Tampa Bay.
Yeah, I agree. So here, I'm struck by someone who hasn't been taken yet, and I'm just going to take the plunge. And some of this is just hope or projection or whatever the case might be. But neither of us have taken Vladimir Guerrero Jr. yet. I have to do it here because I think there's going to be a stretch where he gets hot. He can hit, you know, 8 home runs over the course of a month, something like that, with a lineup that's pretty good. And he can get back to being, I don't know about a first round type player, but someone who's steadily putting up very good numbers, hitting for average, giving you a good amount of power, driving in runs. I just think he can't slip this far as long as he's healthy and in the lineup there for the Blue Jays. So I'll take Vladimir Guerrero
Jr. Yeah, I like it. I like it. I mean, obviously, he's just somebody who could just start toying with baseball at any minute. And I still think the Toronto lineup is a lineup I want to bank on, even though the park hasn't played as expected. Yeah, I'm just going to do it. I told everybody all spring I thought Bobby Witt was mispriced. I didn't think he was a first-round player in this draft. Or the 10-team draft, we're not using him as a second-round player. But even though Bobby Witt still has that lousy OBP, well, it's not a 5x5 category. He does have 13 homers. Right. He does have 25 stolen bases. It feels like every time he gets on base, he steals a base. And he's hitting in the 250s, which is not a kill shot in today's game. I know the lineup is really depressed, and you know they've lost some pieces there. But you know, if this is who he is, he fits the slot I'm getting him in. And if he shows any kind of improvement, then maybe he percolates back into that first round, and it feels like he justifies it. So right. I thought Witt was mildly overpriced before the season. I actually think if you can get him in the third round of a redraft, I know it's a 10-team league, but I think that's pretty good value on Witt. He qualifies at a couple of positions as well.
I like that one. I'm going to go with Garrett Cole here.
Love it.
I think it's just kind of maybe boring at this point, but he's having a great year. His ERA is what, sub three? I think it's just under three right now. 2.79. Piling up the strikeouts. I know the Yankees offense isn't very good without Aaron Judge, so run support may be an issue, but the Yankees bullpen's very good too. So any leads they have will likely be protected most days. And Cole usually gives you at least six innings at, you know, every start. He's just been rock solid and consistent so far for the Yankees this year. So couldn't let him slip too far in this draft.
I forget what the Yankees hit in June. It was like 204 or something in that neighborhood.
It was just right around 200. It's insane.
Yeah. Man, it's just you take Aaron Judge out and, you know, it's just no fun to have. I remember a Red Sox fan. I don't want the Yankees to win, but it's no fun as a baseball fan to have.
There was Aaron a Judge story here. Yesterday. I think Judge took some swings, but he was kind of like, it didn't feel good what he said after. And he was basically saying, like, this is the kind of injury that might take like a year to heal. He might need surgery. He's hoping he can delay it until after the season, but he did not sound overly enthusiastic. So it's really hard to put a timetable on when Aaron Judge will be back. I mean, if it seemed like something was going to be at least, you know, somewhat in the near future, he would have been drafted already, sort of like Alvarez was, mm-hmm. but we really just have no idea.
I hate saying this, but I think if you have Aaron Judge, I think you're in take whatever you can get mode. I would trade him for anybody who would be drafted the top 10 rounds, like without question. I just do it. I wouldn't even hesitate because I think there's a chance that Judge doesn't get back. Maybe he gets back right before the playoffs. They want to get him ready for the playoffs. If the Yankees even make the playoffs, which is not a sure thing, of course, but it's no fun to play fantasy sports like an actuary, but I think in cases like this, it's probably the right move. I'm going to take a player who the gap between real life and fantasy value. Okay. Because Adolis Garcia is not, he swings at anything. I know he's got batting average risk, but he's part of that Texas lineup. I said I want to invest in it. Got a lot of power. He occasionally will steal a base. The run production's going to be there. It's been a park that's been really fun. There's been some keg tappers there. And I think in a lot of leagues, I think the smarter your league is, the more a player like Garcia gets underrated because we just want the stats. It doesn't matter if his OBP stinks. It doesn't matter if maybe he's a player who won't age particularly well when he gets into his mid-30s. He's a productive player right now. He's on one of the two or three best fantasy offenses. Again, watch him on Peacock Sunday morning. I think Garcia's been underrated because, look, he does what we want in fantasy. He fills up categories that we need, and it's not the approach maybe we'd want. He swings at anything. I get it, but that's okay. I'm not building a real life here. I'm just trying to get some fantasy categories squared away. He will do that for me.
No doubt. I thought he was underrated going into the season, and that's borne out so far. He just continues to get it done fantasy-wise for sure. I'm going to go with Pete Alonso with my next pick. Had that injury and was hit by a pitch and originally was expected to miss like 4 weeks with the bone bruise in his hand, but he's back now. It hasn't been great since returning. You wonder about the hand. He's going to be in the Home Run Derby too. He's the Mets representative for the All-Star game. I'm kind of just like, I wish he would stay home and heal. But obviously he wants to be in the Home Run Derby. He takes that all very seriously. But, you know, Alonso's one of those guys, like, he could have a 10 homer month or something. You know, like, his raw power is right there with anyone in the game. And I can't let him slip too far, especially considering Olson went when he was Matt Olson went 12th overall. And here we are, number 26, only four picks left in our top 30 draft here. But yeah, Alonso, you know, assuming he stays healthy, you know, he's probably going to be in the top five home runs, rest of the way, I would think.
Well, I hope so. I have a lot of Pete Alonso shares. So, I would not bet against him in any Home Run Derby, just a pure power hitter. And I'm just a Pete Alonso guy. I always will be. So you're obviously wearing your Mets colors. You don't want to draft any Atlanta guys. You notice all four of their infield players made the All-Star game. So
I saw that. Yeah.
Let's take one of those guys in Ozzie Albies, who right now is actually number 14 in 5x5 bank value. So if anybody thinks this is a reach, he's produced justifying this slot. He's got the 22 home runs. He's got a handful of stolen bases. The run production is really good. Again, I love player in the 20s. Destination offense. He's got the buoyancy of this entire lineup. I just, anybody on this Atlanta team, if we went deep enough, I'd try to get one of their catchers. And, you know, you got Spencer Strider, unfortunately, who's a guy I certainly wanted. I'm curious if we take any more pitchers before we lock up shop. But I knew when we started, it wasn't just going to be Acuna for me. I was going to take some other Atlanta guys. So let's get Albies on the roster.
Okay, and you didn't take Corey Seager yet, so I'm gonna go with Seager. His numbers are just totally bonkers. He's hitting 355 OPS north of 1,000. The thing with Seager is that he doesn't run, and in today's game that matters a lot. I mean, he's never run, so that's why he's kind of a tier. He's always been a bit of a tier behind the other shortstops who will touch all categories, and that's the case now too. But he was the top player that we expected would benefit from the shift changes, and maybe that's part of it. But he deserved better batted ball fortune anyway. Even if you put the shifts stuff aside, being a part of this Rangers offense, I mean, just feels like a slam dunk for Seager here.
I like it. I hope he can stay healthy. And as you said, you're going to have to supplement your stolen bases elsewhere. But, that Texas lineup is destination. He's got really good pieces. Not just, in front of him, Simeon batting first and Garcia's, not far behind him. But they have, really good hitters batting 7th, 8th, and 9th, too.
Yeah.
Leonis Tavares is welcome on any of my teams. And he's usually in that bottom third. Sometimes he bats 9th. I think he's been one of the better waiver wire pickups this year. I feel like we need to have a little bit more representation with pitching. So there's a lot of guys who all look kind of similar, but I'm going to take Kevin Gausman for two reasons. One, just the strikeout rate is through the roof. And two, again, the Toronto Park has played pitcher friendly. I can't ignore that. So I considered Zach Gallen. We don't know McClanahan's health status. If he were healthy, he would have gone a lot earlier than this. I think we all agree on that. But
yeah,
Kevin Gausman, who's a guy Baltimore couldn't develop a pitcher for a long time. He kind of fizzled out there, found his way in the National League, and he's turned into an ace certainly for Toronto. Happy to get him at the end of the third round.
So I'm going to take my chances and go with Shane McClanahan for my final pick. I think this might be a smart way for the Rays to manage his innings. So if they, give him a rest before the All-Star break, let him make the last turn coming out of the All-Star break as well. Maybe ends up missing essentially one start, one turn through the Rays rotation. He's sidelined with a back injury right now. I think he left back-to-back starts with that back issue. So it's a real thing for sure. But I think it's also conveniently timed for the Rays going into the All-Star break here. But if he can come back healthy from this after a bit of a break, he could be a monster the rest of the way. And, the Rays won't have to worry too much about workload as they look ahead to the postseason, which is certainly the destination there for the Rays.
He's a lawnmower. I want to have some fun with three guys in the top 15. Actually, I'll make it top 16. There's four players in the top 16 banked by 5x5 value we did not draft. Okay. And they're all kind of interesting guys. Nathan Eovaldi, who's basically said, we don't have Jacob DeGrom, I'll be Jacob DeGrom. Now, the strikeout rate isn't the same, but he's the number one pitcher in fantasy value right now.
Yep.
Felix Bautista has been the best closer. I'm just not somebody who's going to rank closers in the top 30. I mean, he's been great. Diaz has been great, but I never considered him, even though I respect the season he's had. Two guys who I'm just shocked that they've been as good as they have been. Christian Yelich right now is number 13 in 5x5 value. And I thought, that can't be right. Christian Yelich, 281, 10 homers. Okay, fine. He's got 20 stolen bases. He's got 63 runs scored. He's knocked in 42 runs.
Yeah.
That Milwaukee lineup kind of makes me sad when I look at it because I feel like it's three or four deep. And it's just hard to reconcile. Yelich at one point was a monster. He was an MVP one year. Another year he could have won the MVP. I mean, he might have been the best hitter in baseball at one moment. He's not that guy now. But because he's going to run this aggressively, because he's getting on base, we know he's always been a good OBP guy. He's scoring tons of runs. If you fill the runs category, you're always going to have good hitters who bat early in lineups, and that's always kind of a good cross check. Mm-hmm. Nick Castellanos this season, I didn't see this coming. 310, 13 homers, 6 stolen bases. You think, well, that's not so great, but he's on pace to be over 100 runs scored, 100 RBIs. In a lineup that's been disappointing, Trey Turner didn't go in this draft, right? I don't think you took him, did you, Turner?
No, I took him. I took him 8th overall, yeah.
I'm sorry. I apologize. Well, 8th overall. But the Philadelphia lineup, right? I mean, at least they got Harper back. I had a schedule. I thought we'd be getting a different season than we're getting out of Schwarber, although he did have a great month for power in June. But there's this Nick Castellanos being who he is, a 300 hitter with solid power but not great power, occasional stolen base, good run production. that's I like fantasy. Boring veterans a lot of times are a fantasy jam of mine, and I would think I'd have a lot of Nick Castellanos. I don't think I have him anywhere. Maybe one share, but I'm not benefiting from this. But having a very – if you had gone with a boring veteran strategy, you might have ended up with guys like Yelich and Castellanos, and they've paid the freight so far.
Yeah, no doubt about that. And a name that I think is also shocking as far as fantasy outfielders is Lane Thomas.
Lane Thomas, yeah. I was going to mention
with the Nationals.
In a Sunday morning game, sure.
Incredible season that he's had. Both power and speed. We saw like flashes of this before, but obviously not to this level. But he's enjoying a great breakout campaign. And you know, if you got him off the waiver wire, which you probably did because he wasn't drafted anywhere, you are very happy, although probably it took a little bit of convincing for you to actually pick him up. So yeah, I don't know how much you banked of those numbers, but he's been amazing.
Well, we did pitch him a few times here when he was under 50% rostered. Obviously, he's sailed past that. The question for me is, and the question I will pose to you and to anybody listening, where do you drop Lane Thomas next year? He's a guy who bounced around a little bit, but his Washington stats were always good. He always had an OPS plus well over 100. And I think he'll go into – unless he has a monstrous slump, he'll have this leadoff spot to himself next year. So you're getting the extra volume, the power speed mix plays. He gets on base. Maybe the 300 average isn't going to stick, but I think he can hit for a plus average. Say in a 12-team league, is he like a 7th-round pick, 8th-round pick? Where do you think he goes next year?
I want to see the second half before I answer that question.
That's a fair question.
I want to see how he finishes. But right now, I mean, the profile that he has, I mean, he's probably – outside the top 100, but he's in that area, you know, where you're kind of looking for that third outfielder. I think he would probably be there, but I want to see where this story goes in the second half. Maybe he gets traded. You know, he's one of those, the Nationals don't have a ton of chips. Jamer Candelario, maybe they trade a couple bullpen guys, but
Candelario is another guy. If we did a waiver wire podcast, I might be pitching Candelario, who's actually been pretty good. But you make a good point with Thomas that it's not that his profile is so great that Washington is like, okay, this is a foundational guy. He's age 27 season.
Yeah,
he'd be an interesting ad for a contender, you know, that loses somebody. I could see he's good enough. And also, you know, the team that gets him might think, well, as long as we get who he is right now, that's fine. But maybe he's not a long-term solution for us. I don't know his contract status off the top of my head. But
yeah,
it's – so you get the flip that if he does get dealt, he could go to a contender and maybe bat 7th, 8th, or 9th. So is he better off batting leadoff for Washington? Mm. Not a great lineup. Or maybe he goes to a contending team, but he might bat the bottom of the lineup. So
you know, that's true.
You know what I'd like to see him? Here's a fun place for him to go. Right. How about Baltimore?
Yeah.
He probably wouldn't have to move.
Yeah, exactly. that's very true. And I mean the top prospects just keep coming for the Orioles too. Colton Kowser call up here. We'll probably see Grayson Rodriguez back soon too. He's been pitching really well in AAA. So very exciting times for Orioles fans. So yeah, I mean, I could see it. I wonder if there's just bad blood between the Nationals and the Orioles that they wouldn't trade with each other because
over the TV revenue and all that.
Over Madison, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Producer Adam points out that Thomas signed a 1-year, $2.2 million deal before the season. He's probably arbitration eligible next year. So, gonna get a bump, but probably not to anything prohibitive. It'll be interesting to see how Washington plays the deadline, and I hope we did get it. What the Aroldis Chapman trade went down. We got about 3 or 4 more weeks until the actual deadline hits. And I'm curious to see some of these teams, like you know, my Red Sox, right? I mean, I guess they're quasi-contenders. I think they should sell everything they can sell. I just don't see how that pitching staff gives them any upside in the playoffs. I always am curious about the teams that are kind of on the fringes of contention, but they don't have a roster that would play maybe that great in October. I know it's a short series. Anybody can win. I get it. But from the Red Sox perspective, I think they should sell. What do the Mets do with that gigantic payroll? It's obviously been disappointing. Are they going to be sellers? What do you think about the Mets? What are they going to do next month?
I think they're going to be modest sellers. I think it's basically impossible to trade a Max Scherzer or Justin Verlander. So they've been mentioned, but I find that very unlikely. But you know, someone like Tommy Pham, who's probably the Mets' best hitter over the past month, he's on a 1-year deal. Like he's an obvious, you know, trade chip, not going to be part of the future there. I'd miss him personally because he's been a lot of fun to watch over the past month with the Mets. He's been traded before. He was traded to the Red Sox last year, right? Finished the season there. I could see someone like him going, you know, Adam Ottavino, like that kind of stuff. But I don't really think there's going to be a major shakeup on the Mets roster.
Maybe even Starling Marte in his age 34 season, although he's not having – man, he's much more valuable for fantasy than he has been for real life. His OPS plus is 82. Yeah, he's got the 22 steals, right?
He's running, so that's good.
It's at the point now where if I were a contender, I'd rather have Pham. I think Pham's actually more useful for a lineup these days than Marte is, which sounds kind of crazy because Pham wasn't even in their regular plans. It took injuries, and now it's like, man, he's
got to be there.
He's their second or third best hitter right now.
Yeah. He's been their best player over the past month, and he's elevated himself to the second spot in the lineup, which he deserves at this point. But yeah, I think he's the number one guy who's most likely to go, and maybe, you know, he rubs some people the wrong way, but when it comes down to it, he hits the ball hard pretty much every at bat, and he's in every at bat too. He's a really good player. I've become a fan from, you know, watching him up close. I haven't had the opportunity to watch, you know, every day to see him play, but I think he's going to most likely will be traded. And trade deadline will be here within, 3 weeks? So we'll see those rumors pick up going into the All-Star break. And when we see you guys next week, we will actually be in the All-Star break, leading into the Home Run Derby and all that fun stuff. So we will probably talk about that in our next episode. Maybe we can think of a fun home run themed thing. I don't know. I'll have to think about it. But looking forward to that.
Me too. You know, when I grew up, as a Red Sox fan, baseball was different because there was no interleague play. And the DH was obviously still a part of baseball. It wasn't until fairly recently. I took the All-Star game seriously. I wanted the American League to win. I'm old enough to remember when the National League won all the time. And then Fred Lynn hit the home run off Allie Hamburger in Chicago. And that meant a lot to me. And I used to watch – I'm a baseball fan. I'll watch the All-Star game. But I used to be like, you know, don't bother me on Tuesday night. I'm watching – I want to watch all the introductions. And also, it just speaks to how things were different where, you know, now you can watch any game you want, and which is great. And, you know, the highlights are up. You know, the moment somebody makes a great play, you can see it on social media. Soon thereafter, somebody texts it to you in a text thread or something like that. Right. A lot of times – from my childhood, you watched an All-Star game because it was your only chance to see players. You know, oh, okay, I could see Tony Gwynn, who I normally wouldn't see, or I might see once a year on a random game of the week or something like that.
Yeah.
So I'm not saying the All-Star game still isn't fun. And also, I think Joe Sheehan mentioned this in passing in his – or maybe he talked about it on his podcast with Keith Law. I would love to see like somebody like Ellie De La Cruz in the All-Star game. I know he's only played a handful. He's played 3 or 4 weeks, whatever. But he's one of the most exciting players in baseball. Yeah. It should be a showcase. The All-Star game should be a showcase for the players people want to see. And the player they were comparing him to is like Whit Merrifield. And I know they're not in the same league and everything. But my blood gets pumping when I think of Ellie De La Cruz. I think Whit Merrifield's a nice player, and I respect him, and he's been fantasy good to me. But I don't think anybody's changing their Tuesday night plans because Whit Merrifield's coming up. But I feel that way about the Reds, and I certainly feel that way about Ellie De La Cruz, which is why I took him the second round of our midseason mock draft.
That you did. And I think the All-Star game is a showcase of what makes Major League Baseball so exciting right now. And if you were to think about who are the most exciting players in baseball at this very moment, you know, Ellie De La Cruz is in the top 10. I mean, he has to be at this point. So I agree. I think we had this conversation, too, when – Steven Strasburg was called up, and that was in 2010. And he had only made
14 strikeouts in his first start. I'll never forget.
Yeah. And that was, you know, I think he only made a handful of starts. He didn't make the All-Star team from what I remember in his first season. But I remember a lot of people making the argument, hey, if Steven Strasburg was on the mound in that All-Star game, like it would be appointment viewing. But I do agree, like growing up, I was out of market from the Mets, so I used to have to listen to the Mets, and the only time I'd really be able to watch them was when they'd be on TBS, like against the Braves, or they'd, you know, be on Sunday Night Baseball. You know, that's like an event for me. It doesn't matter if they were terrible; like that's your opportunity to see your team. Of course, you're going to watch them when all the games are available all the time. It's just a little different. It's not as much the novelty part of it. So I understand that. But yeah, if you want your you know, your biggest stage showcase to stand out, I think you want the most exciting players to be there.
Let me ask you one more question. We didn't take a reliever in this exercise. Do you think Batista's the guy? Do you think Diaz is the guy? Who would be your number one reliever right now?
I mean, I think it has to be Felix Batista.
Me too.
With the way he's pitched over the past year and a half at this point. I know there were some injury concerns with him during spring training, which is why he was bumped down a little bit on draft boards. But even still, he wasn't considered a top five fantasy closer, probably. But at this point, yes. And Alexis Diaz, who entered the season with his own questions, has just become a better pitcher. I don't know if maybe Edwin Diaz has some spare time and he's whispering in his brother's ear, whatever the case might be, giving him some feedback. But, you know, he's making up for the lack of Edwin Diaz right now and emerging as one of the top closers in baseball. No doubt about that. But, yeah, I think Felix Batista is the man right now.
I agree. That's my one, too. And also props that David Bednar's had a really good season. Mm-hmm. And with the Pirates, I guess everybody's kind of in contention in that division. And he's somebody who a lot of times when you roster a player like Bednar, you are petrified in the middle of the season because a closer is unneeded on a non-contender. They're like the first guys that get traded a lot of the time. But it seems like he's going to be there for the long haul. And obviously when they signed Brian Reynolds earlier this year, it signaled that the Pirates, it's not hard to see them being a major. I know they're kind of quasi-contending right now, but they could easily be a team that's in the playoffs in a year or two. And I don't think Bednar's going anywhere.
Yeah. So this was fun. Hopefully you guys got something out of this exercise. Just as we look ahead, because some of this is about, you know, our own personal projection, what we think could happen in the second half of the season. So hopefully you got something out of this. I know this week a lot of people are still on vacation and driving or traveling, so kept you company for a little bit here, gave you some stuff to think about as we go into the second half of the season. And like I said, we'll see you again Monday for our next episode. Remember to subscribe to Circling the Bases wherever you get your podcasts, and if you're listening on Apple Podcasts, be sure to rate and review if you like what you're hearing. Also, follow us on Twitter if you don't already. We'll see how long it lasts. But Scott is at Scott_Bianowski on Twitter. I'm at DJ Short. I'm also at DJ Short on Threads, whatever that is. But we'll see. We'll see if Scott gets on Threads as well. Take care, everyone. We will see you next time.
Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.